miserable. But listen, the reason Beattie's doing better than the Islanders is because Beattie, he's like my grandmother. He is not happy unless he's miserable.
Hello and welcome to the Top Shelf Hockey Cast, where we talk hockey. Unfortunately, these days, mostly Islanders hockey. Phil Farber, BD Golliff, alongside me. I'm David Tuckman. BD, how are you, my man?
I'm happy as a pig in shit. No, I'm a little bit better than the Islanders are right now.
So, still pretty bad then, I guess. Phil, how are
you? That's not saying much.
Phil, how's it going, buddy?
Everything outside the Islanders is going well, personally, but the Islanders just, I went to opening night. I was excited. It was the first time I got a chance to be at the new arena, and they didn't even play poorly, but not coming away with a win on the inaugural game of the 50th season set a bad taste in my mouth, and these past three games, I'm sure we'll get into it, not great.
Yeah, to me, it's not as much about winning and losing. I mean, if you look at the opening schedule and you go, okay, two games against Florida, one game against Tampa, I don't think you'd look at the schedule and think, okay, if we stumble out of the gate learning a new system, it's the worst thing in the world. I really don't. You know, whether we were 2-4, 4-2, you know, maybe 2-3-1, something along those lines. I don't think that's the problem. To me, what's worrisome is in six games, we have seen four different lineups. And I don't quite understand. I get Lambert trying to figure out where he's at. And we're going to touch on a bunch of topics today. But the first thing I do want to touch on is coaching. I understand coming out of training camp and not being 100% sure where you want your team to be. But my only concern is that if the players are all learning a new system and not playing with consistent line mates, or at least somewhat consistent line mates, doesn't that make it even harder, BD?
I think so. I think you kind of nailed it on the head. It's almost erratic. It's like part overthinking and part, shuffling and trying to do the perfect thing when the team needs consistency, because you can see they're making mistakes. They haven't, they've only been doing this system since now, and they really need to get consistency, not have it constantly fiddled. They need to see what that will reap them. And even if it, costs them, but at least I find it a little bit disturbing and a little bit erratic.
It seems panicky to me. I mean, I don't mind fiddling for a reason. You're going, you know what? I'm thinking this guy's a really good forechecker. I'm going to put him with this player because they are a good passer. And then this guy's a good and if you're changing it for a reason, but it almost feels, Phil, have you ever been cooking in the kitchen and the spice you needed? Well, there you go. Have you, BD, maybe it's you, or maybe it's our listeners. You're in the kitchen, you're trying to cook something, you realize that the one item you needed to make the food you wanted, it wasn't there, so you just look around and you grab something else. And that's what it kind of feels like is going on right now. It's like, oh, you know what? Not really happy with Bailey, so I'm going to put him in the press box. Oh, you know what? Let's get him back in there and throw him on Barzal's line. That was just like, what is that? Solo, he looked bad. Then he looked good for a couple of games. Then he looks bad for a game. Okay, let's get him out of there. Let's throw Aho in there. I mean, that to me is a whole other subject. We'll get on that in a second. But it just feels like the shuffling, and then suddenly Ross Johnston is playing with Pageau and Palmieri. I just don't that to me. Phil, help me, please. Help me help you.
It's confusing. It looks like he is taking what should be preseason type decisions and implementing them at the beginning of the regular season. Listen, I thought the first three games were very good, including the first Florida game. I thought Bobrovsky was the difference in that game. He was really good. Then obviously they really beat up on a couple of bad teams. To see them be so lifeless at home against New Jersey and then to go on the road and come up empty-handed with them looking completely and totally gassed in that Florida game, only six games into the season, is just very discouraging. The other thing is, Lane is not new to the team. He's been with them for 4 years now. The personnel group that they have, at least up front, is the same exact personnel group that they had last year, all 14 forwards, 15 if you want to include Soshnikov, but that shouldn't make much of a difference. He should already know more or less what he wanted to do with this forward group. The fact that he doesn't have it even close to remotely set is concerning and would lead me to believe that he doesn't, no matter, you know, even though he said contrary to this last night, which I think is just lip service, he doesn't necessarily have all the pieces he feels he needs. Up front, at least.
Well, listen, and I understand that. I mean, I think we all went into this season, you know, going out of last season, we thought, hey, there's four major needs here. We said LD2, LD3 have to be upgraded. We need, whether, you know, BD and I, we might not have agreed on what kind of defenseman, we both said we need a defenseman who can move and skate and play some good hockey, you know. We need upgrades there. We wanted an upgrade at the Bailey position. So theoretically, like the top six winger, even though Bailey was kind of moved to the third wing. Well, now he's first line wing. Who knows where he is? And then we thought Martin was cooked. Surprisingly and lovely, we see Martin is actually playing the best hockey I've seen him play in 4 years. In fact, you could argue that one of my worries, at least one of my concerns going into the season was, hey, do we have another season in that identity line? Does the fourth line have one more year in them? Well, six games in, they have been our only consistently good line. Safe to say? Is that fair?
I can agree with that. I think Martin's skating as well as I've seen him skate since he's returned to the Islanders. Cizikas looks like a one-man wrecking crew out there. He's fast. He's tenacious. He's a big part of why their penalty kill, which has been probably their lone bright spot this season, is 22 for 22, which is exceptional. The goalies have been good too, so I wouldn't say that's their only bright spot. But when the fourth line is the only line that's doing what they're supposed to be doing, it's a problem. Last year, it was pretty easy to identify very early on what the problem was going to be. It was going to be lack of mobility on the back end, the inability to bring the puck up the ice, get the puck out of their zone, and that creating problems for everyone on the ice. Right now, it's just really hard to kind of pinpoint and identify because nothing is working at 5-on-5.
Well,
five.
Listen, to BD's point, and I'll give you credit, BD. 12 months ago, we had this podcast, and you know I rarely like to give BD credit. But 12 months ago, you and I sat here and said, Chara. Chara's the issue. I really think that, you know, we're getting hemmed in our zone. We can't get the puck out of our zone. It turns out it was Green as well. And if we can get the puck out of our zone, we'll have more offense. And that looked like it was the case three games in. But, you know, we have more mobility on defense, but there are more issues now that have been kind of uncovered. Getting back to Lambert before we continue on to something else, the thing that really concerns me as well is you have to imagine that when there were discussions at the end of the season last year, and Trotz was going to be let go and Lambert was going to be brought on, I have to imagine that Lambert had conversations with Lou about what his vision was for this team. He's been here for a while, to your point. He had to have always had a thought of going, oh, I think these guys would work well together. Or I think this would work well together. And that's what's weird to me. It's like, it's as if he's never met these players before. Which is the weirdest thing, BD.
The one thing I had thought is maybe some other people are having a little bit more say, and it's becoming too many cooks. That's my other fear. That's the only other thing of would cause erratic, whether it's ownership or whether it's Lou. Something is not quite right now, and then this is what to question, because is it Lane who should be familiar with the team? Or is there other people and there's panic with and or just a little bit more hands on? That's the only other thing that I could think of.
Yeah, I mean, and there's one thing I just wanted to point out. Josh Bailey's 1,000th game was scheduled to be this Wednesday night at home against the New York Rangers, right? You cannot pick a better venue, a better opponent to have that milestone game for Josh Bailey. Lane, very early on, put his balls on the table and decided in a game in Tampa against again, a foe that Josh has considerable amounts of history given the playoff series. This is the game I'm going to choose to scratch Josh Bailey, pushing that 1,000th game to a random Friday night road game in Carolina. Also, he could put in Nikita Soshnikov so that he could give away the game at the end of the second period with one of the most brutal turnovers I've ever seen. That might have had some sort of effect on the locker room that night, because in the Florida game, it's just inexcusable how they were lifeless. I mean, I didn't watch the game live. I rewatched the game. But, I mean, just think about it. The history. This guy's been a teammate of Brock Nelson, Anders Lee, Ryan Pulock, Adam Pelk, all these guys for a number of years. For them to see, oh, well, Lane's making that decision to bring in this scrub that we brought in from the KHL to screw this up and to mess up a milestone. I mean, that could be part of what we saw last night. But it just seems that all of his decision-making has been questionable.
And by the way, for what it's worth, and you guys know what I think about Josh Bailey, you know, Josh Bailey haters think I'd hate him. Josh Bailey lovers think that I love him too. I mean, it goes back and forth. Anyway, I've always thought Josh Bailey was better than most people thought he was the first 5-6 years of his career. I thought he was far worse than most people thought he was the last couple of years. That said, I thought he was actually good on the third line with Pageau for the first couple of games. First 3 games, I didn't think he was the problem. I thought, okay, put him in a spot where he's not relied on to get a lot of points. He's going to be smart. He's not going to make any mistakes. We've got some speed on that line in Pageau. They're really smart together, so he's going to be in the right spot. It's kind of like maybe overcoming his lack of speed and mobility. You know, he's versus the Devils game, but everybody was exposed, you know? And I give him a little bit of a pass. I'm like, you know, coming out of a game off of, like, you know, off the Ducks and, you know, some other weaker teams, they played a team that just, you know, was shot out of a cannon. And by the way, you know, I don't want to harbor on the Devils. This team is going to be a problem for the NHL very, very soon. This is a very, very fast and very talented team. So the New York Islanders are not going to be the only team this year the Devils give fits to. Anyway, I thought the weirdest thing was I've always been in team put Josh Bailey on the moon, and yet I was like, really? Okay, I didn't think that he was. It just seemed like he was being singled out for what was a pretty horrific game versus the Devils from everybody.
Or was he singled out, or was he just sat because he wanted to tinker?
Yeah, but then to your point, but then to tinker though, you do. Mm-hmm. Listen, I'm not a big.
He could have sat Beauvillier after the Devils game too. I mean, he could have sat. You're not going to sit Brock Nelson, but you could have sat Brock Nelson.
If you're sending a message, why not? And the point is, I was going back to your point, Phil. The simple thing is, if you are just tinkering, I'm not a milestone guy, but yeah, why would you not want Josh Bailey to get the 1,000th game at home? It just seems like, I mean, if I'm in the locker room, I'm looking around going, really, he's going to bench Josh? So Josh is now going to get his 1,000th game on the road?
Yeah, the play didn't really look to anyone. I thought he was playing fine defensively, and the Devils games was just a nightmare. And I still find that strange, trying to just waltz in there and play an up-tempo style against a team that is infinitely faster and not tighten up, not clog the lanes, not do even a little bit.
Yeah, I'll give him a pass, though, BD. I'll give him a pass. See, I always feel like, okay, the first time you play him, we're playing a new style. Let's see how our new style plays Dictive against this style. Fast team.
Nah,
to me, I would give a bigger judgment on the next time we played them.
Yeah, listen, last year, if you recall, the first time we played the Devils, and the Devils were also a very fast team last year. I think the Devils would have had a much better showing overall had Hughes not been injured, had Hamilton not been injured, had they had better injury luck and better goaltending. They could have been a 90-point team last year, as crazy as that sounds. The first time we played them, they blitzed us out of their building 4-0. And then we kind of made adjustments the next 3 times we played them, beating them in each of those 3 meetings. But I remember thinking the first time we played them last year, like, wow, that is a fast team. I think Dawson Mercer had 1 or 2 goals. They were all over us. So, yeah, I think the next time these two teams meet, there's going to be adjustments. But there's so much going wrong right now. And I don't even think he knows where to start.
Yeah, and that's the weird thing to me. I'm thinking, so the Devils game seems to have been, at the end of the day, it was just one loss in an 82-game season, and it's not a big deal unless you ridiculously overreact to it. And the fact of the matter is, our players weren't ready, but also our coaching wasn't ready. We were bad up and down. Our game plan was wrong for a team like the New Jersey Devils. Our players weren't ready for that kind of speed. Our defense, I mean, you can't have your defense moving up and let those speedy Devils behind you for the stretch passes. They were doing that all day long. So I feel like Lambert could have benched anybody, including himself, after that game, in theory.
This three-game set looked like a mid-season West Coast road trip after they've banked 60% of their points in the first 35 games, where it's no big deal. They're going through a temporary lull, and it's the middle of the season, the dog days of winter, whatever.
It's a great call. I remember when they came out after they had basically gotten a point in 15 straight or 16 straight.
17 straight, and then they went to the West Coast.
They came to the West Coast, and I went to the games because I'm out here in L.A., so I go to the Kings game and I go to the Ducks game, and I'm all excited, and they lose them both. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding?
They lost both those games badly.
I'm like, we haven't lost a game in 2 months, and I go to the two games. I'm like, but that was what it was. It was
against a bad L.A. and a bad Anaheim team.
Yeah, and they went West Coast. Great analogy. That is a perfect analogy.
But you cannot have that in games 4 through 6 in your building. And then on the East Coast.
I don't care about game 4. I really don't. They just won a couple of games, and the Devils surprised them. They caught them on their heels. Okay, before they even knew it, it was like 12-0 in shots. You're like, holy shit, the Devils are for real. What worries me is then we go down to Florida, and we lose two games. Now, the Tampa game wasn't...
Two backup goaltenders.
And by the way, Tampa doesn't have Cirelli.
They didn't have
Florida.
They didn't have Chernak either.
Yeah, and Florida doesn't have Ekblad or Uyghur. They are like a defense in like mix. I mean, I was actually wondering. I'm like, this Panthers team, who plays defense for them anymore? So
yeah, very disappointing.
I mean, one point we had what, 7? It was like 18-7 in 5-on-5 shots.
They did not get a high danger chance at 5-on-5 until the third period. Until the third period. I mean, it's just
BD. It's crazy. This is crazy thought, BD. You know, we go back a couple of years, and 5-on-5 we dominated, and our biggest problem was our special teams. And now you look at it and go, we had 2 power play goals versus Florida. We haven't allowed a power play goal all season long. If you told me that our power play was going to be okay, and then our penalty kill was going to be lights out, I would think that we would be at worst 4-2 right now.
Yeah, well, it shows because the 5-on-5 play is the most. And that's where, you know, I was trying to bring that up to fans. And you know, people get enamored by the power play points, which is great when that, at least that is working okay. But, and the PK is great. But the 5-on-5 play is the bread and butter. And if you can't sustain and you can't do the things, and you see these bonehead plays and they come out when they should be coming out hard and they come out flat, it's mind-boggling. And it's early in the season to see that. And then you add in why is the coach tinkering? And, you know, maybe he just knows that things are not working and a little bit of panic. I don't know, but everything altogether has just made it a jumble.
Yeah, I mean, I go back to my point, Phil. 2-4 doesn't worry me. It's a long, long season. What worries me is what I'm seeing in Lambert is just, the moving the deck chairs on the Titanic. Like, what are we doing here? Did you have a plan or not? So I want to go to the first topic I really want to go to is defense, because I think we certainly all acknowledge that we needed an upgraded LD2 and an LD3. Okay, we like the Romanov pickup. Okay, we figured, okay, he's going to slot in either as LD3 or LD2. We've got a left defenseman there. He's only 22 years old. He can grow with Dobson. And then we assumed, and we saw in preseason, we thought, okay, Salo is the next guy. Great. We've got 2 defensemen in there who are infinitely better skaters and faster and more mobile than what we had before. But my fear is, I was down on the Islanders because I was worried that Aho might be brought in as that 6th defenseman. I started to get high on the Islanders when I realized, oh no, it's going to be Salo. Salo has won that job. But then, just 4 games into the season, Salo is now been banished, and now it's back to Aho. And the only thing I'm thinking, Phil, and then BD, I want you to touch on it. If this was the case, if Lambert wasn't 100% sold on Salo, then how does Lou not address that by going to get a Mike Riley or somebody else from the outside?
Could have been Mike Riley. It could have been, what's his name, who the Ducks gave away for free. What was that guy's name again? Who did not the Ducks. The Ducks got him for free from the Wild.
Oh, yes.
Kulikov. Kulikov. Yep. Again, there were teams that were up against the cap that had a plethora of left defense where there were probably a couple moves that could have made sense. Listen, again, I hope he settles down on this decision and realizes that Aho truly isn't it after being in the system or with the organization for 6 years. I think the defense will figure it out. Pelican Pulock have not been playing well as of late. Dobson hasn't been good defensively, but I'm more confident in the defense figuring out. For me, it's just the musical chairs up front and settling down on which forwards you want to have basis.
We'll turn to the forwards in a second. The only thing I'm just wondering, did they really go into the season thinking Aho could be the answer at the sixth defenseman spot?
I don't think so. I don't think they intended to switch it up that quickly. I think Salo being sent down, quote unquote, and I say quote unquote because he wasn't actually sent down, it was just a paper transaction, is a function of him being the only waiver exempt defenseman on the team. And they decided, okay, well, we want to keep 15 forwards for now. They were playing that little gimmicky IR game by having Aho stashed there in order to keep 15 forwards on the roster, which is going to come to an end soon. I imagine one of these days, either Soshnikov or Johnston, someone's going to get waived, probably Soshnikov. But I think at this point, Lane is going to have to just stick with Salo and just let them figure it out. It's just mind-boggling how a game five, when you're trying to have these players establish chemistry with each other, all of a sudden you just change it out right away when there's one bad game. And just like Josh Bailey was the scapegoat up front, I felt like Salo was the scapegoat on the back end simply by virtue of the fact that he's the only guy that could have been sent down.
BD?
Yeah. It's the same thing. Look, Salo has the tools. He has the development is on the way. He spent the season at the AHL. They clearly didn't go ahead and get Riley. I don't think they have Aho where previous Barry Trotz seemed to have some sort of thinking that he gets a shot. He clearly, didn't make the team in terms of the position. And, to me, it's just, you got to get the guy consistency. It's all a learning curve. But once again, it's a jumble. And how does anybody get any kind of try to get the position in hand, work on those mistakes? I don't think he needed to be sat to be shown anything.
Well, and maybe he did. Yeah. But listen, I'm not going to sit here and think that I'm a genius, that I'm like, oh, Salo is going to be the next great, for the top second pair defenseman type thing. I don't know that. Maybe the guy's not. Maybe he's a tweener. Maybe he's always going to be that seventh defenseman type player. I don't know. The thing that worries me is, how did the team not know this? If Lambert and Lou, they should have known this. So it's just one of those things where if you think Salo's the guy, then stick with him and let him learn. If you don't think he's the guy, then why didn't you acquire another defenseman in the offseason? That's my only point.
And that's really the question.
Yeah.
And that will remain.
Let's turn our attention to the offense because, we've got – it just feels like – it's funny. Last year or the year before that, BD and Phil, I feel like we had conversations about whether it was, oh, man, this fourth line, they look cooked. Bailey looks cooked. And the funny thing is that, at least from my vantage point, Bailey hasn't been that awful. And the fourth line has been the only good line we've had. The issues this year are where is Brock Nelson? Where did he suddenly go? And Barzal is averaging, he's on an 82-point season, but he's not the Barzal that I remember. He looks a little bit unengaged, passive in some regard. Pageau looks okay to me. I think Wahlstrom looks okay. I think Wahlstrom looks pretty good. I've liked Wahlstrom's game so far. But outside of that, I mean, Anders Lee is Anders Lee, and he's always going to battle, and the guy's just the ultimate warrior and captain. But, yeah, this team can't win without Brock Nelson playing like Brock Nelson, that's for sure. And that guy's a MIA right now.
I just wonder how much of it is, you know, the Barry Trotz effect, right? The Barry Trotz effect helped a lot of players, and it helped no one more than Brock Nelson, right? He went from a middle-of-the-lineup type of guy to just consistent, you know, high 50s, you know, 60-type point player, close to 30 goals every year until he busted out last year for 37 goals. I don't think the talent just goes away overnight. I don't think you go from having a career year at the age of 30 and all of a sudden just forget how to play. And right now, it's just he looks more lost than anyone. Mind you, he's also on a point per game pace, but I think you know, a lot of the points that you're seeing put up, it's a little bit of fool's gold because they're generating nothing at 5-on-5. I think Brock has 3 total shots at even strength right now, which is shocking. Bo looks lost. You know, Barzal, I don't think Barzal looks lost. I think he, you know, with him, it's a lot more frustration. I think Wahlstrom's been there in terms of their top 9, probably their best.
Yeah.
Game in, game out, forward.
Have you told me, by the way, yeah, if you told me that Wahlstrom was going to be playing pretty good, Bo would already have 2 goals, Barzal would be averaging a point a game, and we wouldn't have allowed a power play goal the entire season so far, I'd be like, wow.
With rock solid goaltending, it's crazy. It's just crazy.
Rock solid to a degree. I mean, in fairness, Sorokin was
there's
absolutely
been one bad game.
Sorokin was garbage in that game versus Tampa.
He was, but 5 out of 6 is pretty good. Goaltending in 5 out of 6 games.
Yeah, Varley, I mean, the first couple of goals yesterday weren't great for Varley either.
Yeah, that first one really caught him by surprise. I don't think he was expecting Pelech to be pushed off the puck that easily.
And I mean, I felt like the goaltending's been good, but I feel like, okay, I felt like Sorokin was basically, you know, he was Vezina worthy versus New Jersey. And then the rest of the season, it's been okay.
He didn't really have much to do against the Ducks.
No.
Ducks didn't really generate anything. Barley was very good against the Sharks.
He was.
I thought there were a couple saves that he made when it was 2-2 that really kept that game tied and allowed them to win that game.
By the way,
that game was a little closer than the stat sheet would suggest. I think it was Couture who broke out of the box and had a clean breakaway there that Barley turned aside. I think, listen, the goaltending's been good. It's been a series of hilarious mistakes at times that have been compounded by lack of ability to generate.
That's the weird thing. It's 5-on-5 is where we're getting really killed, which is what our strength was a couple of seasons ago. Going back to Brock Nelson really quick, the 37 goals he had last year was never going to happen again. For anybody sitting there going like, I think Rob Taub even said like, oh, could he get 40 goals this year?
Nope.
And I was like, I would bet all of my money no, and that's not. And I love Brock Nelson. It's just he shot nearly 22% last year. That's not sustainable. His career rate is around 14. Just to put it in reference, 2 years ago, 2019-20, he had 4 more shots than last year, and scored 11 less goals because he shot 14.9% that year. So you know he's never been. I mean, he's never been a point-per-game player. I mean, he had 59 and 72 last year, 33 and 56 the year before that, 54 and 68. So the points are there. I'm just concerned, like you are, Phil and BD, is just 5-on-5, where are you?
Yeah. I mean, he's a big part of the puzzle. It doesn't work if Brock's not working. That's the bottom line.
I thought they were good the first game, the Brock, Anders Lee, Bo line.
No, I didn't think so. I was there in person.
You didn't see it.
I didn't think they were generating much. No, I mean, the best line in that game was the Barzal line. Barzal, Parisi, and Paul Palmieri were generating everything.
Yeah, they'll probably get 6 more games together at some point. I just feel like I feel like Lambert walks in his office in the morning and just spins a wheel and just goes, okay, what's the lines today? Oh, okay.
I mean, his body language on the bench and in these post-game pressers is Doug Waite-esque. I haven't seen a coach look that uncertain of himself since Doug Waite. It's concerning.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, you look at the team and they seem to have, you know, they're, you know, they, they're playing a system that is supposed to be advantageous, that up-tempo style, and they seem to be having so much trouble
advantageous to what?
Advantageous to the type of play that they seem to want to play. Let's put it as that.
Thank you. I was wondering what.
Oh, and by the way, I didn't mean to cut you off, BD, but another stat: they have the most goals from the blue line in the NHL.
Mm-hmm. I mean, by the way, I will point out, I mean, if you look at the standings, you know, generally speaking, the teams that are winning are going to have a plus goal differential. The teams that are losing are going to have a negative goal differential. The only team that stands out when you look at the standings are the Islanders, because they're at the bottom of the Metro and they still are plus one.
The Ducks game has a lot to do with it.
Okay, but it's still, I'm saying that these goal differentials, if you look at a season, when teams are 8 games over 500 but minus 6, that's a really good way to figure out that team's probably going to start losing some games. And when teams are plus 4 but 4 games under 500, they usually start getting better. They start winning more games. I'm just pointing that out. Anyway, continue on, BD. Sorry.
Well, you know, it's just that they're playing a new system, and you wonder how much of, you know, trying to do that system is really seems to discombobulate them. You know, they were playing a style with Doug Weight that was, you know, supposed to be analytically, you know, speed and all this other stuff, and it wasn't working. And we saw that car crash. Trotz comes in and adds structure, puts them in a defensive system, and they thrive. They work with that system, but it eventually wears them down, and that ends. And now they're trying to adjust to an up-tempo style and just seems to be having so much trouble working with it. And it's really kind of makes you wonder, you know, does this team just do better with a defensive style and just needs to get new personnel, or just needs to get decisions to be a little bit more consistency from the coaching, more consistency in the message, and just buckle down on the system and work it out.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'll sum it up like this. If the idea was that they're getting rid of Barry because they want to play a different style of game, then rolling out more or less the same exact personnel group runs counter to that. Right, it's not like they brought an offensive defenseman. Romanov he moves well, but he's a purely defensive defenseman. He's probably someone who'd be doing great work with Barry Trotz right now, to be frank, in the way that Adam Pellick did, starting out his renewed career when Trotz took over. If this was the idea, then wouldn't it have made sense in the summer to bring in a fresh forward or two? Right, I mean, it could be right now that Lane is just trying to kind of weed out, right, which guys are just not going to be here for the trip from game 15 and on.
Well, that was okay. So that was an interesting point. So somebody mentioned this on Twitter, Islander Takes Matt guy. And he brought this up and I thought it was interesting. He said, this could simply be like, this is Lambert is not just a placeholder. He's not just going to be here for 6 months or a year. He is going to be here. And this is a longer process of him figuring out who will be here for my system. And it might have been a situation during the summer where Lambert was like, I don't think I have the right personnel. Lou might have said, well, I can't do anything with Bailey, unfortunately, so we're kind of stuck. And they said, okay, well, you know what? Let's use at least the first half of the season to find out who I can use in the system and who I can't use in the system. And then we'll go from there.
Right. I mean, and my question is, are they prepared by game 20 to start dipping into the Bridgeport pool? Are they going to do that? I think that's a question that I think will be answered fairly soon, of course, as we approach that marker. But there were a couple of kids at camp who Lou spoke very highly of and Lane spoke very highly of, and they kept these guys there up until the last game. Are they prepared to do something that Lou has yet to do willingly? Right, because Devontae wasn't brought up willingly. He was brought up by virtue of injury. Are they prepared to do something willingly where they make a bold decision we are going to waive a veteran forward. We are going to scratch.
Let's talk about this.
Veteran forward.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's talk about this, Phil. So you brought it up because I know you watched these Bridgeport games, and there's been some positives out of that. You know, a lot of people were high on Samuel Bolduc a few years ago. Then a training camp injury, COVID happened, and then it seemed like Bolduc was kind of off everybody's radar. But he apparently is playing pretty well. I want to hear about him. There was a second round pick, a small kid. I mean, tiny. Who I love the draft pick at the time, and so did all of the analytics guys. Corey Prondman, they all love this kid. I want you to talk about him as well. Ruslan Iskakov. He went to Connecticut, by the way. And I love that draft pick, but it looked like okay, he's just not gonna. He's too small and not quite fast enough for the NHL, so he's not there. Obviously, we all love Ratsu and stuff, all those guys. But talk about Bolduc and Iskakov.
Yeah, I mean, they played five games, they're 4-1. Bolduc has been easily their best defenseman. It's like night and day, a different player from what he was last year. He's, you know, dominant on both ends of the ice. He's a point per game player right now. He is closing in on being the first guy up in the pecking order if there's an injury. And I wouldn't be surprised if at some point during the season, if he continues to play this way, that they give him a look, especially if Salo and Aho prove not to be the answer, which we know Aho is not, but I think they're going to give Saul a lot more rope with the forward group. I don't know how, you know, where they view Iskakov, because they didn't really give him any preseason work. And part of that was because he was banged up, but he is just a lightning rod out there. It's like having a smaller version of Barzal on the wing. He skates so quickly. He generates chances. They have him playing on their top line over there, leads the team in points so far. I like what I've seen out of Ratu. Not a tremendous amount of point production, but he and Dufour did link up for an overtime win, which was nice. I think Holmstrom has looked really good, and they have the kid line as their second line there. That's the Holmstrom, Ratu, and Dufour line. But overall, that team is a wicked, wicked team. They've been absolutely dominating in the early stretch of the season. And I know Brent Thompson wouldn't be happy to have his roster rated because they're making him look real good right now. But I think there are, you know, one or two guys who probably pretty soon could step up into a role if they did want to start experimenting. And on the top of the list, I would say is probably Simon Holmstrom, who this is year four already post-draft. At some point, you have to get him in there. You have to take the training wheels off and see what he can do in real NHL action. They had him stapled to Barzal's right wing for a good chunk of training camp and early on in the preseason. I would have to imagine that was somewhat intentional, no?
Now, by the way, Bolduc is 21 years old, he'll be 22 in December. He is a left shooting defenseman, 6'4". He's got the size. Ruslan,
he can skate too.
Yeah, Ruslan, skate. By the way, he's about 5'8", 155 pounds soaking wet, but can move. He's 22 years old. And Holmstrom, by the way, is just 21 years old, but that's about the age where, you know, a lot of players do. Okay, do you have what it takes to make it in the NHL? BD, I mean, I find it hard to believe that we dip into the AHL at this point. I would imagine that the Lou and Brent Thompson, I would imagine they'd rather have these players have some success down in Bridgeport rather than come up in the middle of this quagmire of shit.
Yeah, you can't. They need time to, you know, thrive. Even if they're playing well, they need to go through. They come out the gate strong, you know, but you really want them to get their time and kind of adjust to each level and move their way up. The only way you do that is if you're fire sale. If this is just a burnt out cinder of a season, and you know that the GM is going to change, and you do a sell off, and you give those kids time on the NHL level, and that's the only way that would happen. I think that you need to avoid that at all cost, unless of course they're playing well enough with much more of the season in their rearview mirror, and there's a need, there's an injury, there's that opportunity.
I disagree with you on Holmstrom simply because, like, the other players have not had success on the AHL level yet. So I'd like to see them have success for a little while. But Phil, I agree with you on Holmstrom, though. I mean, Holmstrom actually had a really good half a season at AHL. So if he's good for the next 15, 20, 25 games and we've got a hole up top, then.
Yeah, I think if he plays well, he might just get a call up.
What do you do? I mean, listen, I put a tweet out before the Florida Panther game and I said, hey, let's chill. Okay. We're 2-3. We played Florida once. We played Tampa once. We've been good. We've been bad. It's not the end of the world. Let's not panic. Obviously at the same time, like I said, I'm not worried about the 2-4 record. I'm more concerned about what I've seen from Lambert. But I will say, if we're going to suck, this is the year to do it. 2023 draft is like absolutely, this might be like a 2015 draft. They're talking about this draft being just generational.
Yeah, I mean, and if that's the case, then, you know, what better time to have an expiring goaltender like Varlamov, an expiring defenseman like Mayfield? They have, I mean, we're not going to talk about this now because we'll do a lot of shows leading up to trade deadline and we'll see where the team is, but they have expiring contracts and pieces that they could sell off to recuperate assets and possibly even a first round pick or two this year.
I mean, it's too early to talk about it now, and I don't think the team should be panicking by any stretch, but I'm wondering, I mean, Mayfield and Varley are the obvious, you know, trades, you know, and you get some assets for players on expiring deals. Are there any players that are not on expiring deals that you would consider moving if, because either A, you think we've gotten all the juice out of that orange, or you also thought we can get some assets back for them?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the shock name would be Brock Nelson, right? If they have determined that this is a team that needs a major shakeup like that, and they want to infuse Ratu, who Lane said is strictly going to be used as a center. Wing is not an option for him. They asked him about that before the season started. He has to go somewhere. I think someone who's going to have a lot of trade value coming with two extra seasons at a very reasonable AAV, at a very reasonable age. It might sound crazy, but if the wheels really fall off, then potentially Brock Nelson.
Yeah, and I'm going to go on a limb, BD. Of the say 18, 19 teams that are in the playoff hunt by that time, how many will need a good second line center?
Quite a few would like to seal that up and have that guarantee. So.
Phil, anything else we should touch on? I mean, obviously it's only six games in and I think obviously we wanted to do kind of an early season primer and see where we were at and stuff. I don't think I don't think it's all crumbling around us, but, anything else you want to touch on?
Nothing as it pertains to the season. I think the only thing we didn't cover, since the last time we all met was I just wanted to get everyone's quick thoughts on the Barzal contract. Obviously we're all thrilled that he's going to be here for eight more years after this. And again, if they're going to go into some sort of rebuild or major kind of retool, they have to be mindful of the fact that when they kick that off, Barzal is going to be 26 and starting a new deal. So you want to make sure that everything lines up. But what do we think about the deal, the AAV? I'm thrilled with everything about it. I think they hit a home run, a grand slam here for all parties involved.
I think it's a great. You know, I thought it was going to be expensive. I didn't really think he was going to sign just yet. I would have thought that he would have waited a little bit longer, but it does give a little bit more onus on, you know, Barzal not being particularly thrilled previously, though that might add some drama to those who think that everything was hunky-dory last year and it was just, you know, that's crazy that Trotz was fired and all that, but the fact is that he signed and sealed it up like this really gives a lot more energy to that.
Yeah, my only thoughts about Barzal, obviously, I think, you know, after we lose Tavares, you know, Barzal is a bona fide star and he's our star. You know, whether he's not Connor McDavid, he's not Nathan McKinnon, and people argue that he's not elite, he's not the top. No, he was drafted 15th, 16th overall, not first overall. He has his limitations, obviously. I'm obviously a huge Barzal fan, and I think it was really important for ownership and the team to keep one of their own. And that, from a message standpoint, you know, was the AAV, you know, $400,000 more than I wanted it to be? Yeah, but I mean, the difference between 8.75 and 9.15 is pretty much nothing. I mean, there's rumors of the cap going up by possibly $4 million next year. If it's not four, it's going to go up $8 million over the next 2 years, pretty much. Yeah. So, you know, you're looking at a cap that is going way, way up, and to have one of your best players signed in at just over $9 million for 8 years is great. The other aspect of this that I think people are missing, there's two that I'll throw out there. Number one, when you give a 26-year-old an extension, it's actually a really good time to give the extension. When you give players extensions at, say, 22, 23, or then they get another deal at 30 or 31, and a lot of that time, those players want to get another 7-year deal in there. And then it becomes a little bit prohibitive because now you're paying them a lot of money later into their career.
JT Miller.
Yeah, exactly. JT Miller, Nazem Kadri, great examples. But I love the idea of you lock somebody up before they hit UFA, and you lock them up until basically for their entire career now. I mean, if Barzal still has something left at 34, you know, And if he does, which is great, then you give him another 2-year deal. You give him a 1-year deal. Or maybe if the Islanders aren't contending and there's a good relationship, he goes, hey, listen, can I do a Claude Giroux? Can I go to a – send me to a team to contend and try to win a cup type situation. But he's an Islander for life, and that's a wonderful thing. I do tell fans out there, I go, listen, just because he's now making $9 million a year does not change the player he is. He's not suddenly going to become a 40-goal scorer because he's getting paid more. That's not going to happen. Do I think he needs to shoot the puck more? Absolutely. I think it will help his passing. In fact, the personal trainer for Patrick Kane, the skills coach for Patrick Kane, talked about this with him. He said, hey, listen, you're the best passer and playmaker out there. But if the defense and the goalies don't think you're a threat to shoot, it's going to hurt your passing. So when they know you can shoot and they know you will shoot, it makes you that much more dangerous of a passer. And I think Matt Barzal needs to know that. Like the other day when he passed up that shot in the slot, it's just what he, and I get what he's doing because I mean, think about it.
Lee had no angle.
He had no angle whatsoever. A lot of times what's going to end up happening is Elliott's going to go from his right post where he was on Lee. He's going to slide across to the center to cover Barzal, and then it should be a wide open net. The fact of the matter is, Elliott is so slow, he never even left the right post. He was still there the whole time. So
and as a matter of fact, if you look at the replay again, the person who's clawing for the puck is Beauvillier, who was on Barzal's right, and he would have had a really nice looking one timer there.
And it would have been a one timer, right? Because I mean, Lee shoots lefty as well. So yeah. I mean, but Barzal's got to shoot that puck, and if he shoots the puck more, he will be more dangerous as a passer. That said, he's still not going to. He's not suddenly going to be a 30 goal, 90 assist guy. That's not who he is. I don't care if you pay the guy $15 million a year or $2 million a year. It's not going to change who he is. So I just throw that out there. But all in all, I listen. My cat is named Barzal. I'm happy. It would have been really, really awkward if I had to get rid of the cat.
I actually do think you could get that. Not 30 to score 30 goals, but as an elite playmaker, he can get Bafo points if he has line mates that are, you know, pretty high yield type of players. You know, that's the thing of being an elite playmaker. You're contingent on who you're with.
Yeah. What Beattie's saying is when the Islanders get Pasternak next summer, it's going to be.
Oh, stop it. Don't even go there.
We got plenty of time for that. Plenty of time for that.
Last thoughts, Beattie, before we cut this one off.
You got to hope that things start to settle out. You need the team, one, stop making the bonehead plays, the giveaways, the taking the penalties. It is killing them. And the problem is with this new system is the erosion of confidence. They didn't look like a very confident team, though they did start to play a little bit tighter in the Florida game. But it was, you know, too little too late. And, they really need to come out stronger in these games. They're coming out flat and they need to really buckle down I know I've said it a couple times, but they just have to do it. Because otherwise it's going to be a very long season.
Phil, usually we count on BD for the pessimism. We count on you for some optimism, but you have been anything but on Twitter. For those who want to follow us, by the way, it is at BD Golliff. It is at Phil's with a Z facts. Phil, last thoughts as we head into game seven and the rest of the season.
All I'm going to say is if there was ever a time to turn things around, it would be kicking the Rangers' ass at home Wednesday night and getting off the schneid like that. I mean, nothing boosts a team's confidence like smacking their home, their arch rivals, their crosstown arch rivals. If they can settle it down, settle on some consistency with the combos and with the D pairs and get a good win against the Rangers, hopefully that will help reignite that lost confidence that BD just spoke about, get them on the right track, and maybe they can steal a win in the next two against Carolina and the Avalanche before the schedule lightens up a bit.
Yeah, for me, I coach a U10 team, which is squared hockey. I change our lines less than Len Lambert does. It's pretty amazing. I'd love to see the coaching staff kind of settle down a little bit. Hopefully that gives the team a little bit more confidence as well, and we'll see where it goes. I just don't want to be mediocre. I want to either really suck or I want to be good. I don't want the 14th pick in the draft again. I'm gonna put that out there right now.
Yeah, it's either top five or
even top seven is fine. I want to be team suck or make the playoffs.
Exactly.
Okay, one of those two
things.
I'm
with you there.
Anyway, we'll do this again in a couple of weeks, and hopefully we'll have some more positive things to talk about. BD's got to go. I know. Phil, thank you so much for your time as well. Once again, you can follow them at BD Golliff, at Phil's Facts. I am at Tuck on Sports. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Beauty.